lesson today is found in the 13th chapter, or the 12th chapter, of the Gospel of Luke, beginning with the 13th verse, where we find in this chapter Christ had a great multitude of hearers. In the beginning of the chapter we read, there was an innumerable multitude of people surrounding him and listening to him preaching. This means that there were so many they could not be even counted. And as he was preaching the word unto them, this man interrupted him in the midst of his preaching. And a certain man spake unto him and said, Master, speak unto my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. But Jesus said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he commenced to speak to the multitude again, and warned them against covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance that he possesseth. Now this man, who he was, we do not know, but he came to Christ with a case. It was probably a dispute in the family concerning how much each should get. Now this one that spoke to Christ, he wanted Christ probably to do right. Probably his brother done him wrong. We don't know. This is all probability. But probably again, this brother, the elder brother, he didn't give him anything of the estate. There are such people that when some person dies of their relatives, and there are many left over, the one that has been very close to this one that left the estate takes everything, irrespective of the brothers and sisters that remain. There are such people that are so greedy and crave so much that they care not about their brothers or sisters. They think, the commentary thinks probably, that this was the type of a man that this brother was, that he took everything for himself and he retained it and he wouldn't give anything to his brother. And therefore, this brother came to Christ with this case. But the commentary, Matthew Henry, he thinks that this brother that came to Christ, he wanted more than what he actually should get. Under Israel of old, the oldest brother, he was to receive the double portion of the estate. And this probably was the case. And now this brother came to Christ, he wanted Christ to change the law. He wanted him to make it equal. He wanted him that Christ should speak up and that he should make this brother divide this, what was left between them equally. And now, Christ, he did not come to be a judge. He did not come to interfere with the proceedings of families and the distribution of the wealth that is left. He came to be a teacher. He came to be a savior. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge over you, or a divider over you? He would not judge and he would not divide anybody's inheritance. And therefore, he dismisses this man in this way. For this man was seeking to have Christ do something that was against the law. Now, this law was amongst Israel, and Christ wouldn't interfere in any of the civil laws. He came likewise not to show that he was a man that would interfere with the Jews and in their civil positions, but he came to speak and to be judge over ecclesiastical government, especially over the church, over the religion that was in existence at that time. So Jesus did not, in this way, interfere into this case. But from what he says, Matthew Henry thinks that this was the case, because he begins to speak, beware of covetousness. Covetousness is a sin which you and I and every one of us have in us. So this is a craving, a longing, and a desiring to have more than what God has allotted to us. We have the 10th commandment, which teaches us that we should not covet our neighbor's house, we should not covet our neighbor's wife, we should not covet our neighbor's servant or his maidservant or his ox or his ass. God has given us this commandment to bring us in guilty, for we are by nature our covetousness. And therefore the Lord speaks against it. He warns us against it. Beware of it. It's a sin that you and I are apt to fall into. This covetousness we find so predominant in so many people. They see their neighbor have a beautiful home, beautiful furniture, beautiful car, beautiful ground, and they like to have that too. The Bible teaches us we should not covet what our neighbor has. We should be content with what God has given us. So many covet things that are earthly, things that we have to leave behind when we die. So this covetousness, we find simple explanation of it. You go to a shopping center. You see so many things displayed in the windows for sale. And you don't have these things. Sometimes you stand there and you admire them. Right away, your greedy heart, I wish I had that. You don't have any money to buy it, but you do wish you had it. That's being covetous. That's not being satisfied with what God has given you. Oh, how many of us like this, my dear hearers? And each and every one of us are guilty of it in this respect. Therefore, Jesus says, beware of it. Watch for it. For a man's life does not consist in the abundance that he possesses. So this is all our life consists of by nature. In this and in that, and all we do is desire to have the natural things. I wonder if I have anybody listening to me that has a different desire. I wonder if there are any that desire the spiritual things. Oh, what a mercy. There may be one or two, I don't know, I can't look into your heart. But there may be some of you that are so troubled about your sin that when you get in bed at night, you begin to think, will I wake up tomorrow morning? Maybe I'll die while I'm asleep. And oh, where will my soul be? Are there any like that listening to me that are troubled about themselves and troubled about where they're going to spend eternity? Oh, you've been here last Sunday. You heard me teaching about Christ, speaking unto this people that were in this house by Mary and Martha. One thing is needful. And maybe you said, that's so true. That's something that I missed. I don't have that one thing needful. What is that? That's Jesus, his righteousness, his blood. You miss this precious Savior for your immortal soul. Because you miss him, you're laying awake sometimes at night and you think, well, what will happen to me if I should die without him? Or inside you say, I wish I had that part that Mary had. Mary had chosen that good part that could not be taken away from her. And you miss that good part. This is your own estimation of it. But you do desire to have that part that she had. And now Jesus teaches us in this chapter too that we should not seek after the things of this world. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all other things shall be granted unto you. Oh, it's a mercy to speak this first, my hearers. Every one of us speaks it last. In fact, we don't speak it at all until God puts it into our hearts to speak it. Oh, we are so busy with natural things, material things. These things that mean eternal destiny, either hell or heaven, we very seldom are troubled about it. Oh, I may pray to God that he may make every one of you trouble concerning this important matter. This man, he wasn't troubled about that either that came to Christ. He was troubled about his worldly estate, troubled because he didn't get enough out of it. If he had come to Christ and had spoken to Christ about eternal matters, surely Christ would have righted him right away. But he didn't. His trouble was earthly matters. And therefore we find Christ beginning to speak a parable. Now whether this actually took place or whether it was the form that Christ used sometimes, in trying to bring his points over, the commentary doesn't say. But anyway, he spoke a parable to them. And said, a certain rich man, his land brought forth plentifully. He then was a rich man, and he had probably many acres of land, and it was a good season. You know, we have sometimes seasons that everything grows splendidly. Such a season we've just been having. It's been mentioned even in the paper. What a crop we're going to have, because we had so much rain, and we had such nice sunshine, and sometimes we had such nice cool weather, and everything was green, and everything is growing. And even the reporters, they're even reporting already about the crop we're going to have. So it must have been with this man. He likewise had a beautiful farm, he had a beautiful home, and he had servants and handmaids working for him. He was rich already. He didn't become rich by fraud. He didn't become rich by deceit. No. He became rich because he was a wise man. He knew how to do things. He was gifted with wisdom from God to use his ground and make it bring forth fruitfully. And by his industry in this way, he had been blessed by God and he had become rich. In fact, he didn't need what came forth this season. He was rich already. But he had this wonderful farm and this beautiful home, and he had now this acres and acres of ground bringing forth abundantly, bringing forth wheat and barley and rye, and bringing forth in his vineyards so many grapes. It was wonderful to himself. He walked through it every day. He was so happy. He was looking at what was growing, and it was growing so good. But the one thing was the matter with this man. He forgot the God that was causing it to grow and that had already blessed him with what he had. No acknowledgement, of course, of God at all. He was just glad because everything was growing so good. Oh, it's a sad thing, my hearers, when we are so blind as this man was to the blessings that God has bestowed upon us. I wonder if you ever had it in your life that you were given to see how good God has been to you, providentially. I'll stay by that at first. You've been blessed with a family, you've been blessed with good health, blessed with employment, you went ahead in your position, and you became pretty well off, we'll say. You don't have any needs or any cares, and if you do need something, you have the money to buy it. But have you ever been brought down before God considering what you are and who you are and what you deserve? Looking at your life that is past, surely goodness and mercy have followed you to the present day. But has it ever humbled you? Has it ever broken you down before God? Or do you not even realize that it is from God? Do you pass him by like this rich man? Oh, my dear hearers, it's a great blessing if in life we can be brought to the place where Jacob was brought to. You know, Jacob, he had went away from his father's home because for fear of being killed. And the first night he was out, God met with him. Blessed night for Jacob. Has God ever met with you? He spoke to him, told him that he would be with him and that he would do well unto him. 20 years went by. In them 20 years, God had richly blessed Jacob. Read his history. Not because of anything in Jacob, because Jacob was a sinful man. But God blessed him. He was one of God's dear children, irrespective of all his sins. And now God commanded him to come back to his father's house after 20 years. And when he was coming back, he heard that his brother Esau was coming to meet him with 400 men. Oh, he remembered Esau. He remembered what he had done to him. He remembered, too, that Esau was seeking to kill him and had planned to do so, and he had to flee from him. And now Jacob, so that night, he comes before God. And he reminds God of the word that he had spoken to him 20 years back. Thou hast said that thou wilt do well unto thy servant. And when he begins to think how well God had done to him, he came down into his unworthiness. He didn't. Oh, he cried out, I am not worthy of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast shown unto this thy servant. For I came over this ford with my staff in my hand, and now I am become two bands. Have you ever been there, my dear Harry? Have you ever been brought down before God, unworthy of all what he has ever given you? Oh, it's a mercy to be brought there, my Harry. I wish I was there every day of my life. To be nothing, to be unworthy, to be the chiefest of sinners. And let me ask you another plain question. Has God been so good to you as to give you all this material blessing? Has he also come into your heart with his grace? Has he sought you out of the multitude? Has he called you out of darkness into his marvelous light? Has he shed his love abroad in your soul? Has he led you to know him? Have you been given to love him, to serve him, to worship him? Oh, blessing of blessings, my dear Harry. God may bless you abundantly, materially, and providentially, but if he grants you this blessing, a new heart, a new life, to give you to believe in Jesus Christ, his dear Son, all that you have said sometimes, why me, Lord? You have sunk away in wonder and amazement. You could not understand why the Lord had chosen you and sought you out from above so many other creatures that were 100% better than you. All this brings a person down in the dust, my dear Hillary. I hope and I pray that some of you may know something of what I'm talking about. Most of the time, it's Greek to most of the people. But this is a good place to be brought to believe that God has a favor toward you, that you are in his hands, and that nothing can happen unto you without his permissive will. But this man had not this. He was a rich man. He was a man that was worldly. He lived like that, and this parable teaches us that he died like that, too. He did not remember God with all the mercies and blessings that God had given him providentially. For we find that he was at loss what to do with all what he had. He had so much. What was he going to do with it? When he looked at his barns and what he had, that'll never fit in there. He was at loss. He didn't even stop to think, well, I could give it to the poor. I could give it to the Levites. I could give it to someone that's a relation to mine. Nothing of the kind. That teaches us that he was a selfish man. He was only thinking about himself. What will I do with all the fruit that I see hanging on my vineyard? And likewise, what is upon the field. He was at loss. He didn't know what to do. He had these kind of thoughts. My dear Hillary, you know, God knows the thoughts that you and I have. We don't think of it as much. We wouldn't want to tell everybody our thoughts either, what we think about others. We keep them to ourselves. But God knows every one of our thoughts. And what a mercy it is if you know that God knows them. And many times, you are so guilty because you have such miserable thoughts, such wretched thoughts, such devilish thoughts, such atheistical thoughts, thoughts that are no good. You wouldn't dare discuss them with anybody. But they come up in you, and you go in secret, and you tell God about them. You wish that God would take such thoughts away from you. You don't want them kind of thoughts. But you have also at times different thoughts. And what are they? Or it might be that you can do as David in Psalm 38. Lord, he says, all my groanings are not hid from thee, and all my desires are not hid from thee. David, he then had a heart that was continually penitent, groaning because of the sins of what he found in himself, but also desiring after God, after communion and fellowship with him. He could open his heart unto God and say, look in, Lord, is it not true? Are there not these things going on in me? You ever do that with your heart? You ever come before God and speak to God in this way? David could say likewise in Psalm 139, search me, O God, and know my heart, and try my thoughts, and see if there be a wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Blessed thoughts, my dear hearers, blessed desires, too. So this man had no thoughts like this. He was thinking about his earthly trouble. He had so much riches and he didn't know what to do with it. And he thought, I'm at loss. Now, he could have easily just added another barn to the ones that he had. He could have easily thought, well, what am I going to do with all this? Let me give it to the poor. They'll be happy with it, and it'll make me happy to give it to them. No such thoughts came up in the poor man's mind. He only thought about himself. And now he's laying on bed at night, and he's thinking, what should he do? Finally, he makes a decision. He says, I know what I will do. I will tear my barns down, and I will build greater, and I will put all my fruits and all my goods in these new barns. And then I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast laid up much good for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. This is what he decided to do. One would say, well, that's not wrong. We have here, I was thinking something like what goes on in the times in which we live. There are many people that are looking forward to what? To retirement, right? If they had enough money and they were wealthy, well, they probably would retire much earlier. But they don't have too much money, so they have to wait to a certain year, and then when they retire, then they're going to live on the bounty of the land, what the government gives them. They live on Social Security. This is what thousands of people are looking forward to. In the meantime, they spend everything they have. They don't care. They live the way they want. This is the way worldly people live. They're looking forward to a time in their life that they will take it easy and they will enjoy themselves. So many people do that. So this man, he had this in his mind too. So, well, I'll store it all up, and then I'll have plenty, and then I won't have anything to worry about, and then I can take it easy for the rest of my life. Poor man, a fool. Who said so? God. God calls him a fool. Why was he a fool? In the first place, he was a fool for trying to think of tearing down all the barns that he had. There was no need for that. He could have just as well thought in his mind to build one. That would have been enough to take in the overflow that he was going to have. He was a fool likewise for thinking that as he stored this all up, he would have enough for many a year to come, not knowing that that very night God was going to call him up. Not even thinking about that, no. He saw before him many years of ease, many years of pleasure, many years of eating and drinking and enjoying life. Never thought about maybe death might come. Another thing he didn't think about was that even if he did build all new barns and put all the stuff in these barns, in about an hour, if a fire came into it, would all be taken away, all what he had and all the barns too. This is what he didn't think about either, foolishly. In the way that he thought, in the way that he planned, it was all without God. He then thought that he would have it good, and he wouldn't need anybody to help him. He would be retired. He wouldn't have to labor no more. And this is what he was looking forward to. And now many people do this. And Jesus speaks here about this night thy soul shall be required of thee. And whose then will be all this that you have provided for? This is a thought, my dear Hebrews, that none of us like to think about. Death, every one of us, me too, we put it far from us. The last thing we don't like to think about, death. And still it's so close to us. It could happen any moment. We see it round about us daily, hear about it, how quickly men are taken away or women are taken away. And why not you and I? Are we any different? Not one bit. It is only by the goodness of God that we are yet what we are. This night thy soul shall be required of thee. Oh, what an awful thing, my hearers, to live and to act as this man did. And then, suddenly, you have to appear before God to give an account of our stewardship, of all that he has given us. If you take particular notice, this man, he says, my fruit, my goods, they weren't his. God had given him them. God has given me new things, too. And we are stewards over what God has given us. God could take away what we have immediately. He could take the riches that we possess. He could take our house from under us. And he likewise can take our life away. And this he does many times. And this he was going to do to this man. God spoke to him and said, thou fool! How did God speak to him? Probably by some untoward providence, or probably in his conscience. You know, many people, they have wealth in abundance. They have plenty. And if they need anything, they have money to buy it. But the Bible teaches us also about such creatures that they are misers. They're afraid to spend their money. They even hoard it, even keep it from their own comfort. They don't enjoy the blessings that God gives them and live upon them. This is terrible, isn't it? If God gives you health, strength, gives you employment, gives you to make money, and you don't even want to use it for yourself, you want to put it in the bank, you want to hoard it, you want to keep it. Oh, what a miserable life this is. There are many people that live that way. They wouldn't buy a new suit of clothes. They wouldn't buy anything that they need. They're afraid to spend their money. You know, they love their money more than themselves. So they are miserable creatures, wretched creatures that live like that. I hope I don't have one of them amongst my hearers. But the Bible teaches us there are such men. And now, there are many likewise that are gifted by God with plenty. And they use it. They use it. They live on it. They enjoy it. But they likewise have no acknowledgement of God about it. And sometimes we see in the midst of all their enjoyment, of all what they're living in, they're suddenly taken away. One night in the garden, the same night they were talking with their wife and their children, they went to bed, and during the night, gone. How often this is the case. The Bible gives us several incidents of this kind. If you think of Belshazzar, that king, he had gathered all his great men around him, and he had taken out the vessels that his father had taken out of the temple to Jerusalem, and they were drinking wine out of them. And in the midst of all his gathering, there comes a hand starts to write on the wall. It was his death sentence. It was declaring unto him that God was going to bring his kingdom to an end and himself too. So this man, he received his death sentence. this night thy soul shall be required of you. My dear Hilary, did God say that to any one of you? Where do you think your soul will be? Doesn't it trouble you? No concern about it. I can't change my position, you say. I can't do anything about it. That is true, very true. But God has given us his precious word, and he teaches us to seek him. I hope, I pray, that God may give you all to seek him. I've continually brought this before you. It's so necessary, my hearers. You have nothing to lose by seeking God, not a thing. You have everything to gain. Why shouldn't you do this? If you could obtain a fortune, if you had to go somewhere suddenly, you would get so much money, you'd be there right away. Think of this. Tonight, maybe, God might require you, where will you be? Seek him, my dear Hilary. Seek him on your knees. Seek him in reading his word. Seek him in his house of prayer. Oh, may you be given that grace to seek him earnestly, sincerely, uprightly. And oh, may you be given that grace in your very heart to find what a pleasure it is to seek God, to live with God, to enjoy God in his life. This man didn't have God in his thoughts. In any of the things that he planned to do, God was not in it. And now he's given to know that this night he must die. Oh, probably, maybe he had made a will. Who knows? A lot of people don't make a will. Sometimes suddenly they die and there's no will. Whether this man had made a will or not, the Bible doesn't teach us. But Christ says, whose then will be this good that ye have provided for? Probably his relatives, probably his children would get it. But he didn't know whether they would be wise and that they would use it right. The commentary says, many a man, if he knew what would happen unto his house after he died, if he knew beforehand, he would have never beautified it. He would have burned it to the ground. This is the way those blessings which God has given to some people are squandered. So many spend recklessly everything that they get when their father or their mother dies and they're left something. In a little while, it's all gone. So this man didn't know what would happen with this, what he had gathered either. This is what Christ speaks. It may be that they may have used it, and they may have lived on it, and they may have enjoyed it, and they may have had a blessed memory of the man. What a blessing, my heroes, if we have parents that have, in the mind of their lives, provided in a way for themselves and also for their children. They leave a legacy behind. And the children, that they may follow in their parents' footsteps. I hope you children may do this. Of course, children can die too before their parents. But this is normally the case. And it's a blessing when we may use the blessings of God given unto our parents to use them to his honor and to his glory. But this man, he had to leave everything behind. And whose would they be? This is something that you and I don't know. We may have a will, and we may even know who is going to get what we have, and we have willed it to them, but we don't know how they're going to use it and what they're going to use it for, whether it's going to be for their good or whether it's going to be for their evil. But, my dear Hilary, if we have the grace of God in our hearts, that's something we can't pass on to our children. We can't give this to another. But when we have this, whatever we may leave behind, we leave behind in the hands of God, content with what he has given us in life and content that we may be taken up to be with him, to be with God forever and ever. And now, such is this man. He is in this character, a worldly man. He had it good in life. He got a fortune, we would say, and he was going to live on it, and he was going to enjoy it. And that's all that he lived for. Is that all that you live for, my dear Harry? That is your life, even though you may have plenty. Oh, what is your life without God? I think we have a thought that it says that. To live without God, what is it? It's death, isn't it? So, dead to God. Dead to the things that are going to be hereafter. No concern whatsoever. Oh, that God may awaken you to that awful fact that maybe this very night your soul may be required of you. And then you will have to give an account of all what God has done for you in your life. And I'm sure you will be mute. You will not have anything to say. Oh, may God in his rich mercy prepare you for this hour. For it'll come as a thief in the night. It comes unexpectedly. It comes surprisingly. So many times when we least expect it. Surely, we may sometimes take particular notice of some poor people that are afflicted by the hand of God, and they linger for months. They ail for years. But some, in one night, they're taking away. Some people say, well, that's a good way to die. Nobody has any trouble with me, and I'm gone. They don't think about where they're going. No thought whatsoever. I think it's a blessing that God gives us to just that. I think so. Especially if we may remember the sins that we have committed against this God and be brought to humbleness, to sorrow, brought to be given to see that God has done nothing else but good. We have done nothing else but sin. Oh, blessed are ye if ye are brought to this point before ye die. For there is hope for such a person in the person of Jesus Christ. May the Lord, in his infinite mercy, bless my feeble instruction I've been trying to give you out of his word this afternoon, and let all the praise be to his name. That's all for today.